Good morning, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Select Committee on Land and Mineral Resources. You are all welcome. My name is Ulifile Sefako, the chairperson of the Select Committee on Land and Mineral Resources. We'll start by introducing ourselves. I'll hand over to the honorable members to introduce themselves, our supporting staff, the department, and the distinguished guests that are here today. Because this is a very, very important day, which has indeed attracted the members of the community from all walks of life, because it affects very, very critical issues of humanity, nature, and thought, which are interrelated and interconnected. Honorable members, can you just quickly introduce yourself?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. I'm Ellen Prince. I'm a member of this committee, and I'm representing the Western Cape. Thank you.
Morning. My name is Zukiswa Ngcitha. I'm the member of the committee representing Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Morning, Chair, honorable members. My name is Tony Duba, the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Economic Development and Environmental Affairs in the Eastern Cape.
Good morning, Chair, and everybody else. I'm Kathy Labiskagni. I'm a member of the committee and representing the Western Cape.
Good morning, everybody. My apology for being late. My name is Bayer Smith. I'm representing Limpopo.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning to all of you. My name is Omi Singh. I'm representing the province of KwaZulu-Natal.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Errol Magerman. I'm the chairperson of Economic Development, Environment, Agriculture and Rural Development in the Gauteng province.
Morning, everyone. Musa Nkosi Mlambo from Gauteng, a member of the committee.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Azka Bauer. I am the committee secretary. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Amanda Zindler. I'm the committee assistant of the committee.
Good morning, honorable members, all present. My name is Shahida Bowers. I'm the procedural advisor for this committee in the NCOP.
Maybe before I hand over to the department, I've got three apologies from honorable members. Honorable Julius, Honorable Nyambi, and Honorable Mukhosi. Can I then hand over to the department to introduce himself? DG? To Honorable Minister, yeah? Thank you very much. You are most welcome. Over to the Minister.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the Select Committee, members from the various provinces in the country, the department, officials, media, ladies and gentlemen. Let me welcome the opportunity, Chair, to address the honorable members of this House. The department is here this morning to brief members on the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Amendment Bill. Members would be aware that the bill was passed last week by the National Assembly. We are quite excited by this development as it paves the way for us to finally conclude the bill. I committed in September last year when I assumed office that I would do everything in my power to ensure that we work with Parliament to process this bill. This would assist us to enrich the necessary regulatory and policy certainty required by the current and potential investors. Members would also recall that the President of the Republic of South Africa, His Excellency Mr. J.G. Zuma, had referred the bill back to the Parliament in order to establish that the issues he had raised would pass the constitutional muster. The President had raised two substantive issues and two procedural issues, which he required that the regulators look into. Three of the issues have been complied with by the National Assembly. The fourth, the issue of sufficient consultation at NCOP and provincial legislature, is a matter that this House would be required to deal with. As a reminder to honourable members, the bill we brought to Parliament for amendment sought to, amongst others, achieve the following: to improve the ease of doing business, address the shortfall identified in several court rulings, improve regulation of social and labor plans to optimize the development impact of the mining industry, to develop and consolidate these into district municipalities' integrated development plans, to introduce a credible and orderly means of state participation in the development of the nation's petroleum resources, to provide for an integrated licensing regime for the granting of rights, issuing of water use licenses, and approval of environmental authorizations, to provide for regulation of associated minerals, provide for designation of minerals as strategic for the purposes of supporting local beneficiation and industrialization, and to align the provision for sanction to non-compliance with the Competition Commission and introduce a deterrent to non-compliance. The bill has been referred to this House for further processing. The Department stands ready to support the House through this process. At this stage, Chair, if you allow, I'll then hand over to the DG and the officials to further talk about the bill. Well, as I think, okay, let them quickly introduce themselves. I thought we had already started with the work. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister, colleagues. My name is David Msiza. I'm the Acting Director General in the Department of Mineral Resources. I also have Mr. Gwazi Mhlongo, who will be also helping us. Mr. Mabuza.
Morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Musa Mabuza, DDG Policy and Promotion in the Department.
Morning, Chairperson and everybody, Honourable Members.
My name is Bongiwe Mabusela. I am the Director Empowerment Transactions, Department of Mineral Resources.
Morning, Chairperson. Morning, Honourable Members. Morning, Minister. My name is Kagiso Menwe, Director Beneficiation Economics from the Department of Mineral Resources.
Morning, I'm Sibusiso Kobese from the TMR. Thank you.
Morning, Chair. Morning, Members. I'm Desiree Swartz. I'm Parliamentary Legal Advisor.
Morning, Honourable Members and Chairperson. I'm Dr. Kasson, also Parliamentary Legal Advisor.
Morning, Chairperson.
Morning, Chairperson. My name is Mashirunir. I'm on the DMR.
Good day, everyone. My name is Mandy, and I'm also from the DMR.
Morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Kole Gabeja. I'm a legal advisor from the Eastern Cape Provincial Legislature. Thank you.
Good morning, Sanbonani. My name is William Zwile. I'm the legal advisor from Mpumalanga Provincial Legislature.
Can we? It is important to know who else is in the house. The elephant in the house. So if we can all of us make sure that we just very briefly, quickly introduce one another.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Sean Lunn. I'm the chairman of the Offshore Petroleum Association of South Africa.
Paul Scott from Statoil.
Morning, Chair. My name is Sebatela Mokhesi, a researcher of Free State Legislature.
Morning, everyone. My name is Khatazo Ngiani from Free State Legislature.
Good morning, all. I'm Monique Doyle, PMG.
Morning, Minister. Morning, Chairperson. Morning, members. Colleagues, Zagita Zama from the Chamber of Mines.
Good morning to everyone. My name is Alessandro Gelmetti from ENI.
Good morning, everyone. Jared Davidson from Northern Rose School.
Good morning, Chair. Morning, Minister. Philip Okudji, CEO of Falcon Oil and Gas, and Chair of the Offshore Association of South Africa.
Sorry. Morning, everyone. Philip O'Quigley, CEO of Falcon Oil and Gas and Chair of the Onshore Association of South Africa.
Morning, everyone. Marek Renishek from Anadarko Petroleum South Africa.
Morning, Chairperson and everybody. My name is Liesl Oberholzer and I'm from Norton Rose Fulbright.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Bob Winter from Africa Energy Corporation.
Good morning, I'm Yerisha Singh, a legal researcher from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor.
Good morning, I'm Ibrahim Hendricks from Petroleum Agency.
Good morning, Kanita Abrams from the Northern Cape.
Good morning, Minister, Chairperson, Honourable Members, colleagues. I'm Nombuzo, PLO for Northwest Province.
Good morning, Honourable Minister, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Karabo Makhakhane, Northwest Provincial Legislature.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much. At least we have got an indication, a feeling as to who else is here. And even the importance of this bill, as the minister has indicated, that the outcome of it will indeed affect the socio-economic sphere of all of us. It pulled the interest of organs of civil society and individual members of the community. Organized business and individual men and women in business. Organized farmers. Even the interest of the farm workers. It is therefore important that we deal with this matter as the Honorable Minister has already made an opening remark. I will not waste any time, but hand over to the minister also to nominate who is going to lead us with the presentations of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you once more, Honorable Chair. The DG will lead. We have capable officials who have been dealing with this bill. They will present it.
Thank you, Honorable Minister, and also Honorable Chairperson, members. Once again, thank you for the opportunity provided to brief you on the bill. I will request Mr. Mabuza, who will take us through the presentation itself. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Minister TG, Chair and Honorable Members. In our presentation today, we'll quickly run through the introduction, the strategic objects of the bill, the objects of the bill, and we'll take you through the proposed amendment and how we deal with the notion of guided ministerial discretionary powers, the streamlining of interdepartmental processes for the purposes of issuing licenses, the interface with environmental management, and we are also bringing forth additional proposals for consideration by the committee, and then we will conclude. Honorable members, as you are aware, major mining regulatory reform was brought by the promulgation of the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act number 28 of 2002, which effectively gave effect to the internationally accepted right of the state to exercise sovereignty over all its mineral and petroleum resources. In particular, reference is made to UN Resolution 1803 of 1962 that gives all state this power to exercise sovereignty. The bill vested custodianship of minerals and petroleum resources with the state. And the next two bullets must be read together. The first one is that the Act separated surface rights, land ownership in particular, from mineral right ownership, because previously the land owner would effectively not only own the land, but also own the minerals beneath the surface. As we know today in our country, large proportions of land remain owned and controlled by the previously South Africans, advantaged South Africans, and foreigners. And so this separation is very important to emphasize. In the first decade of promulgation and of the Act, it created an enabling environment for both growth and transformation, particularly of the mining industry. The statistics of growth in terms of revenue, investment, fixed costs, fixed capital investment, and so on, corroborate this view independent of what we can say as a department from various independent structures such as TSSA and others. In 2008, the Act was amended in order to inter alia give effect to the One Environmental Management System. This is a system that seeks to streamline the licensing for mining, environment, as well as water licensing. Notwithstanding this tremendous progress we have made in reforming the mining industry through the MPRDA, within a short space of time, the decade of promulgation has provided us with the benefit of jurisprudence, effectively hindsight, on the basis of which in this bill we are addressing the inherent weaknesses that we have identified. I will touch on the strategic objects of the bill. Key among them is we want to improve the ease of doing business in the industry, including what I have slightly alluded to, streamlining and integration of mining, environment, and water authorization processes. And this aligns this bill with the National Environment Management Act, as well as the National Water Act. We sought to strengthen the content of the bill so that we can further enhance and continue creating a conducive environment for investment, inclusive growth, and job creation. The bill sought to augment and substantially increase the socio-economic development impact through both mining and upstream petroleum industries. It is important for us to balance the needs of business with the national development imperatives, and this is one of the key strategic objects of the bill. To further entrench the principle of security of tenure and the protection of the sanctity of investment as an integral part of the country's mining regulatory framework. To provide for radical economic transformation in the mining, minerals, and upstream petroleum industries, and to bring the administration of historical stockpiles, the dams in particular, created prior to the promulgation of the MPRDA into the ambit of the Act. Honorable members, on this point, reference is made to a court decision on a case of De Beers against the Department of then Minerals and Energy, that the dams that were created prior to this bill cannot be administered through the ambit of this Act. And so what we are effectively doing is we are enabling the administration of all those historical dams under the this bill. We provide for states' active participation in the development of petroleum resources. We seek to provide for the designation of minerals for national development imperatives, such as security of energy supply, input into food security, as well as industrialization, amongst others. Enhance provisions relating to the regulation and implementation of social and labor plans. This is an area that is a subject of high interest, how we can seek to optimize the development impact through social and labor plans. And in this bill, proposals are advanced to be able to achieve that. It provides for partitioning of rights as well as the strengthening of sanctions. We will talk about those provisions later. Entrench and embed transformation, in particular the mining charter, within the bill. Provide for enforcement of housing and living conditions standards for mine workers, and to address certain shortcomings that have been identified in several court cases, such as the Maxand court case, the Mawete, as well as the Bengwenyama case, amongst others. In the next couple of slides, honorable members, we are taking you through the proposed amendments, the salient features of the proposals in particular. The first one relates to Section 9 of the Act. This is the introduction of application by invitation. This bill introduces a dual application system. In fact, honorable members, if you allow me to explain a little bit, that currently we use the first-come, first-served notion. And I will put it to you that if you have a vacancy, as an anecdote, can you imagine if you have a vacancy for a critical post and you applied the notion of first-served, first-come, first-served? The first person who applies and meets the minimum requirements by law must be given that post. Surely that entrenches mediocrity. And so it became very important that we consider how we deal with issues of applications. And it is on this basis that we are proposing a dual system. And this is how the dual system is separated. Firstly, where the state has invested in generating the knowledge, the minister is empowered to invite applications for a defined period through a gazette. Now, it means that the terms and conditions as would be stipulated in the invitation and supported by regulations will accompany the invitation. And this is an established global practice in many of the well-developed and matured jurisdictions. However, South Africa is peculiar in that knowledge currently does not always reside with the state. As we transition towards acquiring all the necessary geological knowledge, we recognize that there is knowledge that is independently, that is resting independent of state. And so that gives effect to the second provision of the dual application system that is provided. And in this case, we retain the notion of first come, first served. We are proposing, honorable members, that this will ensure orderly and optimal development of both the country's mineral and petroleum resources. And this will further enable us to optimize the transformation and development impact through the exploitation of the aforestated resources. The next slide, honorable members, deals with a very emotive subject of stakeholder consultation. In this bill, we are proposing provisions that are aimed at strengthening consultation with affected communities. And this includes traditional leaders. That traditional leaders have previously not been explicitly included in the consultation, although they were implied as legal occupiers of the land. And so what we are putting across is an explicit stating of traditional leaders as part of the affected communities. The bill further provides for separation of consultation in terms of the two categories, the directly affected stakeholders as well as interested stakeholders. It further provides for the DMR to lead in the facilitation of consultation. In the current Act, the responsibility of consultation rests with the applicant without necessarily the involvement of the DMR. And through the experience and this benefit of hindsight, the proposal is that the DMR must provide the leadership in the facilitation thereof. This provision seeks to ensure that the consultation that the applicant engages in is particularly meaningful, with both especially emphasis placed with directly affected stakeholders. It further provides that affected parties with an opportunity to submit their comments as well as objections where such exists. In these sections 10 and 16, we further give the regional manager powers to forward the comments and objections to the applicant for further consultation with affected stakeholders where such may arise. Honourable members, we move to section 11, which deals with the partitioning of rights as well as the transfer of rights. This section is amended to provide for the partitioning of rights. It enables the holders to dispose of part of their right subject to the requirement of the Act. Currently, the right holder may not partition and dispose part of the right. It's either they have the entire right or they do not have it at all. And in this regard, there is prior ministerial consent that is a requirement for the transfer of rights for both listed and unlisted companies as prescribed in the regulations. In this regard, the transfer of any interest, 0.1% transfer of right in an unlisted company or more, will require ministerial consent. However, for listed companies, it will be the change in controlling interest. If there is a change in controlling interest of the right, that will require ministerial consent. And I think I need to pause and explain here what our experience has been in the 14 years of implementing the bill. We find that an application under certain terms and conditions and partners, in particular, black partners, meets the requirement at the point of application. And once a right is granted, there is material change that is effected in the ownership structure of the right without the department knowing. And so it became very important, therefore, that we strengthen this provision so that any changes in the ownership, particularly of unlisted companies, is then a subject of ministerial consent. For listed companies, if such changes are at the controlling interest, then that will kick in the requirement for ministerial consent. We have looked at the practice in the country. The Banking Act prescribed the threshold for ministerial consent at 15%. And so with the banks, you may not change beyond 15%, listed or not, without the consent of the minister. And we find the same requirement in the the Communications Act, I think, as well as the Gamblings Act. And so what we are proposing here is not inconsistent with an established practice in the country. But it is necessary that, given the experience that we have had, for us to introduce these proposals to discourage dilution of BEE ownership in the industry that happens without the government knowing. And it also introduces that the consent, in order for minister to give this consent, the minister must reaffirm the rights and interests of affected groups including workers and communities. Based again on experience, that certain commitments are made at the point of application and the right is changed, and when it changes hands, then there is no respect for the material conditions and commitments that were made that affect both workers and communities in particular. And so here we further provide for the national DFIs, such as the IDC, to finance exploration, prospecting, and mining projects through mortgage bonds without necessarily having ministers' consent. And here we introduce, because for the banks that are registered with the Registrar of Banks, it is a material condition that they do not necessarily seek the consent of the minister for that to happen. Honorable members, the next amendment proposal relates to the social and labor plans. This is contained in Section 23. The bill provides for social and labor plans as follows. Firstly, that there must be submission and approval of social and labor plans within the prescribed time frame. Again, this is seeking to address an established general, not always, mischief of a commitment being made at the point of application, and once the extraction begins, you then find that the commitments are not implemented on the basis that the approval has not been sought. A clarity is being provided to indicate that the social license to operate, and in this case the social and labor plan, is applicable for the duration of the mining right, and not only for the 5 years, as it had been a general misunderstanding. However, within that duration of the right, which could be up to 30 years, it is required that the social and labor plan is reviewed and approved within intervals of 5 years. A percentage of the holder's contribution towards mine community development is accordingly prescribed in the reviewed mining charter of 2016. And the introduction of this threshold is important because we have previously not prescribed the level of contribution towards community development. And so we looked to other established jurisdictions and found that it is a globally acceptable practice to prescribe this level of contribution. We looked to Canada, we looked to Australia, and we looked at certain Latin American countries as well, where the contribution of mining towards community development seems to have a much greater and visible impact than it is the case on our shores. And so the objects of the Act are accordingly amended to include labor sending areas. The next slide proposes the strengthening of the provision on beneficiation, Section 26 in particular. Honorable members, here it is proposed that the minister be empowered to designate minerals in consultation with a relevant minister for national developmental purposes in order to support the national development imperatives such as industrialization, energy security, food security, infrastructure development, fiscal stability, and to bring optimal benefit to the country. to ensure transformation of the mining industry and related sectors, and to ensure cost-competitive security of supply of minerals that are contributory to the aforestated national development imperatives. For instance, here, honorable members, if the minister were to designate a mineral contributory to energy security, this will be in consultation with the Minister of Energy. If it were a mineral that is contributory to food security, this will be in consultation with the Minister of Agriculture, and so on and so forth. And so the bill requires mining operations to set aside a certain percentage of their production for local beneficiation. I think it's important here, honorable members, to explain that the right holders are not prohibited from exporting minerals. I have heard a number of opinions in the public discourse that are purporting that Section 26, as it is proposed, introduces restrictions of exports of minerals out of South Africa. Nothing could be further from the truth. To the contrary, the restrictions on export of designated minerals are introduced to those who would have secured mineral production on the basis of the provisions of Section 26. And so, for instance, if a person A is a right holder, a person B is able to buy from the right holder on the basis that they are going to support local beneficiation. The person B, who is not a right holder, has no business of exporting those minerals because they secured those minerals for the purposes of local beneficiation. And it is only in that regard that the restrictions are introduced. The next provision, honorable members, relates to black economic empowerment. And these amendments are contained in sections 1, 17, and 28 of the bill. When we introduced transformation, an impression was created that all we require is the mere extent of the holder's compliance with the amended charter. And so what these sections are introducing is that there is actual compliance that is required and contained in the law. The emphasis is on effective black ownership. And the reason it's black ownership is that it is aligned to the BBBEE Act, which is the custodian of transformation. We have previously used historically disadvantaged South Africans. And as a country and seeking to streamline our regulatory framework, it is important that our transformation initiative in the mining, which is a subset of the broader transformation, is sufficiently aligned with the main act that gives effect to transformation. And so the definition of this act has been revised to expressly incorporate the amended charter into the ambit of the Act. And the BEE requirements have been extended to prospecting right applications. It is our view, honorable members, that entry at prospecting is more cheaper and it will enable the historically disadvantaged South Africans, in particular blacks, to enter at exploration rather than to enter when it is highly costly to enter this this industry. The next one, honorable members, deals with the introduction of state participation in the petroleum industry, clause 86A, and I must emphasize that this is as things stand in the bill, and we will come back a bit later to our new proposal and the basis thereof. In the current bill, provision is made for states' active participation in the petroleum industry. The state, as it currently stands, has a right to a 20% free carried interest in all new exploration and production rights. Just to preempt what we are going to discuss later, there had been subsequent events, which I will explain, that warranted a modification of the original proposal. In this regard, the state is entitled to a further participatory interest in a form of acquisition at either agreed price or through production sharing agreement, and the state has a right to a board representation. In dealing with the provision on sanctions, honorable members, this is now section 99. The bill provides for enhanced sanctions. These are linked to a percentage of the annual turnover of the right holder, which is consistent with the provision of the Competition Act. Currently, the maximum penalty in the bill, in the Act as it stands, is 500,000 rands, and our experience has been that 500,000 rands is hardly a deterrent in an industry that generates hundreds of billions of rands per annum. It is not our intention to punish the industry, but we are saying where there is non-compliance, the consequences must match the non-compliance. And again, this is aligned with the provision of the existing regulatory framework, in this regard, the Competition Act. The provision is also made for administrative fines, which will be payable to a designated fund and used to promote exploration activities and matters incidental thereto. These sanctions are truly intended to serve as a sufficient deterrent, as I alluded to earlier, and to encourage compliance with the Act. Honorable members, the issue of ministerial discretionary powers has been one of the hotly debated issue, and we have provided for guided ministerial discretionary powers both in Section 56 and 107 of the Act. In terms of the proposed Section 107, the Minister's discretionary powers are guided in the following manner. Firstly, the Minister must develop regulations relating to procedures applicable to invitation of rights in terms of Section 9. Secondly, the Minister must consult with relevant stakeholders when developing terms and conditions applicable to both state participation in respect of Section 86 as well as beneficiation in respect of Section 26. And the Minister must take into consideration the Council's advice when developing such terms and conditions. In essence here, Section 56 establish a Ministerial Advisory Council, which is what we are proposing must be taken into consideration by the Minister when the terms and conditions are developed to give effect to those particular provisions. Honorable members, we then touch on the streamlining of the interdepartmental processes. In the year 2010, the Minister of Mineral Resources adopted the strategy for sustainable growth and meaningful transformation of South Africa's mining industry. This strategy was developed with our key stakeholders, including organized business as well as organized labor. In the development of this strategy, there were constraints, binding constraints, that were identified, amongst which was a fragmented licensing mechanisms, which in the view of the minister denied South Africa's global competitiveness of the industry. For instance, we have had rights that were issued, yet the water use license, for instance, may not have been issued at the time of developing this strategy. And so these disparities were found to be undermining our ability to be globally competitive as an industry. As a consequence, the ministers of mineral resources, environmental affairs, as well as water affairs, agreed on developing modalities to streamline licensing requirements for mining in line with the 2008 amendment of the MPRDA. The Joint Portfolio Committee on Mineral Resources and Environmental Affairs was previously briefed prior to the commencement of the public hearing on the alignment of the MPRD amendment bill as well as the NEMLA bill in 2013. After the conclusion of the public hearings, a joint PPC meeting was held to ensure that the necessary amendments have been effected to the various pieces of legislation. And so this resulted in the amendments of sections 39, 40, 41 and 42, on the basis that prior to 2008, mine environmental management was provided for under the MPRDA. Section 39, in particular of the MPRDA, provided for the process for approval of mine environmental management plans and programs. Section 40 provided for consultation process with state departments on approval of EMPs. Section 41 provided for financial provisions. Section 42 provided for management of residue deposits and stockpiles. Section 43 provided for mine closure, and applicants had to comply with these provisions in order to be granted rights and permits, as well as comply with the requirements of NEMA. The requirements to comply with the various pieces of legislation had proven to be cumbersome and further contributed towards non-compliance with, amongst others, the National Environmental Management Act. The Maxan judgment in particular reinforced the view that holders of mining rights must comply with all relevant prescriptions. Honorable members, I did earlier make reference to a set of additional proposals that we are bringing forth, and this is in respect of the outcomes of the Oceans Pakisa. After the bill had been sent to the President, the Honorable President convened stakeholders, the petroleum stakeholders, no, not just the petroleum stakeholders, the various stakeholders in the Oceans Operations PAKISA that is looking at accelerating the development of the oceans economy in its entirety in this country. And a subset of the Oceans PAKISA focused on the development of petroleum resources. And so based on the outcomes of this PAKISA, the department has engaged comprehensively with the upstream petroleum industry to re-look at, in particular, Clause 86A, as well as several other clauses, in order to find a win-win solution for the sector, taking into account that South Africa is considered a frontier state in the development of petroleum resources. In this regard, Clause 86A of the bill is being reworked to propose the following. The threshold of state participation remains at 20%, but we shift from free carried interest to state carried interest, in line with the global practice. Secondly, there is a cost recovery mechanism for the carried interest at the production stage of the right. There is a provision for downward adjustment at production stage in consultation with the Minister of Finance. This is the consultation of Minister of Mineral Resources with the Minister of Finance. There is certainty of project terms that provides for the determination of terms for both exploration and production rights for the duration of the right. And there is renegotiation of terms upon renewal of the production right. The maximum tenure for the right is similar to that of mining, which is 30 years. There is proposal that introduces relinquishment of contiguous portions of exploration rights at the renewal stage. And so if the right holder, the exploration right holder, feels that they no longer have resources nor the interest to continue with a large portion of, or a part of the portion of the right, they can relinquish part thereof back to the state. The minister is given powers in terms of what we are proposing to develop a petroleum charter. Currently, the bill only provides for the mining charter. And given that mining and petroleum are not the same, it's important, therefore, that we propose a separation of charters and introduce that the ministers can indeed develop the petroleum charter to give effect to transformation of both the oil and gas sectors. In addition, it's proposed that there be a 10% BEE shareholding in the petroleum rights, as opposed to the current 26% to mining. It is further proposed that these additional amendments to the bill and related proposals be included in the finalizing of this bill in order to provide for necessary regulatory certainty. Honorable members, we have also identified loopholes relating to the application of small-scale mining. And we are therefore proposing that the applicability of small-scale mining be limited to 50% plus one, 50% plus one South African-owned companies, This is in relation to the issuing of permits. The permits were created specifically to empower historically disadvantaged South Africans. But our experience has been that well-established companies, they come in and apply for permits as well. It therefore became important that their enthusiasm is curbed. It is proposed that the definition of historically disadvantaged South Africans be replaced with the definition of black persons, as earlier explained. It is further proposed that non-compliance with Section 100 be included in Section 47 of the bill in order to empower the minister to either suspend and or cancel the rights should the applicant fail to comply with the requirements of, one, the mining charter, and two, the housing and living condition standards. This is the seriousness with which we are proposing that the issues of transformation be dealt with. We are also proposing an amendment of the definition of effective date so as to give effect to the Mawethe judgment. Honorable members, we also identified a number of technical errors that we humbly request that through this process of finalizing the bill, that they be addressed. These include some grammatical errors in the bill. For instance, such errors are found in the definition of prospecting right, and clarity is also provided in the proposed Section 9 to clarify the dual application system. Clause 22, Section 27, there is several grammatical errors that are corrected to provide clarity that the section refers to mining permits that I have just explained in respect of the small scale, the support and augmentation of the development of small scale mining in the country. An amendment is further proposed to Section 100, Clause 74, to empower the minister with the powers to develop a petroleum charter, as earlier explained. And an amendment proposed to Section 9 to provide for dual application system. A further amendment is proposed to the mining right granting section, that is Section 23, and rights and obligation of mining right holders in terms of Section 25 to include compliance with the housing and living condition standards in order to ensure that the standards become a material condition of all mining right holders. It is proposed that Section 27 dealing with small-scale mining be amended to limit its application as indicated earlier. It is also proposed that the proposed amendment in the bill relating to the replacement of the designated agency, that is the Petroleum Agency of South Africa, with regional managers be omitted so that we retain the existence of the Petroleum Agency of South Africa. An amendment is also proposed to Section 96 to provide for the appointment of an appeals panel relating to the processing of an appeal involving the state-owned mining company. We had received here, honorable members, reservations that in the event that the minister is processing an application from the state-owned mining company, how would he deal with the possible conflict of interest? And so this proposed amendment provides for an independent process that will process the appeal in the event it arises where the minister deals with an application from the state-owned mining company. Notwithstanding that there is no provision in the Act that provides for a special treatment of the state mining company per se. In conclusion, Honorable Chair and members, the proposed amendments and the additional proposal to the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Amendment Bill will, amongst others, strengthen the architecture of the mining and minerals regulatory framework and direct a shift towards local mineral value addition, will contribute towards national developmental imperatives, streamline licensing processes, provide for state participation in the petroleum sector, and lastly, significantly boost the energy security program through extractive industries that span mining, minerals, and petroleum industry. Thank you very much, Minister.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much, DG, for the presentation. Honourable Minister, thank you. I think we are going to allow now for the question sessions of the members to ask questions on the presentation. Can I invite him? Thank you, Honourable Member and Honourable Lavas Kahne.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. Chair, I have about three questions, if not four. Section 9 of the bill, you've made an example of an employer, this thing of first come, first serve. I was not sure about the coloration in terms of what you're presenting. I did not get to very well whether does it really correlate in terms of the workplace. And then with Section 10 and 16, Honorable Chair, on the consultation, how do you measure a sufficient consultation, especially in areas where there are conflict, because we know currently that there are areas where there's a lot of conflict. Now, a point of emphasis which you have presented is that traditional leaders now are part of the consultation, and the issue that I would like to perhaps explicitly get it clear from the department is that how does sufficient consultation said it is sufficient, it's done. And then Section 11, Honorable Minister, that in which basically intends to ensure that if we said we're giving PE, it's fine, it stays like that, there is no fronting on all sorts of things. It's a good intervention. But I don't get it. How are you going to deal with the capital investment? Because in most cases, you are at that level because there is a lack of capital investment. You know, I mean, just a typical example, Honorable Minister, Honorable Chair, through you, there is quite a lot of the Arab land where farms were given to people. You know, I'm just making a practical example, and then you see there that there is no capital investment in this area. People take advantage; those who want to exploit and those who want to use black people, you know, come in because they know they will get value for their money. no matter how small it is that they have spent. But how do we then, now the minister is, or this provision seeks to protect black empowerment, but how do we then ensure again that we allow a situation where there is investment so that you get the license, you continue, but also there is a open door open for investment to come in. Well, Section 26, Chair, does not talk about how do you deal with issues of the environment. Because, Minister, you can consult with whether it's Department of any other department, whether it's Water Affairs or any other department, in terms of saying you determine for the development. But in most cases, where you see an opportunity for development, you get the environmentalists coming up. And I see that you only, when you speak about National Environmental Act, is aside. But how I wish Section 26 can also take into consideration at all times, or okay, perhaps you can get an explanation that at all times the Minister of Environment will always be consulted, so that while you continue with the determination in trying to push for a development in certain areas, you don't only get environmentalist activists coming up and saying they are not consulted for whatever reason. I think if we can take that into consideration, not to say that it has been taken care of somewhere, because in most cases you get a situation where it's either it's for environment or it's for development, and we should not be in that state. And lastly, Chair, the additional proposal, what informs 10% be in the petroleum? What informs that number, taking into consideration how many years since 1994? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I won't deal with the questions that's been already dealt with, because I all had similar questions. The first one, I just want to get clarity on, let me just get where I am, on Section 10, 16, what is the including of the traditional leaders? What has it changed, and what is the process and the impact on this bill? You mentioned, and yeah. Then Section 11, I'm covered by the other honourable member. Section 23. The SLPs. I would like to know the inclusion of the SLPs and the mining charter that's later on, another section. What impact will it have on the existing mining rights and companies? And specific with reference to what you've already that you've made a point in saying that people were afraid, or the industry were afraid, that the mining charter has status of law and that non-compliance with the Act could result in withdrawal of mining licenses. You said that that was a fear, but later on, in the back of the, and I just have to find the referral here on page 21, additional proposals. It is further proposed that non-compliance of Section 100 be included in Section 47 as to empower the minister to suspend and or cancel rights should the applicant fail to comply with the requirements of the mining charter and the housing and living conditions. It actually stated exactly what you said in the beginning, people feared of, and it's not true. So can you just explain to me how these things are going to fit together, and also on the existing mining rights and and the industry that's in place at, as it is at the moment. Then Section 26. I would like to know what is the, can I get clarity from the department on Section 26 as it is now proposed in this bill on beneficiation? How does it influence the general agreement and trade and tariffs and the trade and development and cooperation agreements between South Africa and the rest of the world? What is the implications thereof? And then I would also like to know that some of these things is said here and I ask questions and then later on and I have to, you know, not all our minds work alike. I would like to know then on the beneficiation, in the back you said that only, where is that? Okay. That sorry, Chair, I have to look for this now because it went that the second person, that the person don't have the right that sorry, I have to get my words now. The person who's getting the minerals or the from the right holder for own beneficiation has not the right to export, which I understand. Now my question is, what is that percentage that is going to be given, and is that percentage going to be determined on specific minerals, and for what kind of period? Because all these things are a big uncertainty. And yes, and you're going, I know what you're going to say to me now, that will be addressed under regulation, and that is exactly my problem. Because the minister will do the regulations when the act is already there, and if you don't agree with the regulations, it's tough. Then, because we already approved the legislation, I see you nodding your head, but I need to get that explanation. And then, for what period? Because minerals, yes, things are changing in the world. Will the minister determine in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years? What is the time frame to determine what minerals will be made available for beneficiation and what not? And then, that is a good idea, but within agricultural and in all other industries in South Africa right this moment, this committee is sitting and listening to departments and asking, where are the markets for these people that we want to develop and to empower? Because we don't have markets. So we give these minerals to these people for their own beneficiation. Who's going to fund them? Who's going to create markets for them? Who's going to create the industry and the infrastructure? Because they don't have that kind of things. So to what good will this come in the end, except that it's a beautiful picture on paper? But in practice, there's no proof that this will work, because the practice of beneficiation through agriculture and those things are no, at this stage, no success stories. So I would like to hear that. And then sorry, Chair, I will be finished now. The petroleum proposed amendments clause 686. We are not always as informed as, or most of the time not as informed as our learned colleagues in the department. Petroleum, does that in this bill, does it include offshore as well? If not, why not? Then. And I just want clarity on on the environmental, the section 39, 40, 41, and 42. And it's, I think it's just my lack of understanding this. Prior to 2008, in this bill, does all these sections are being displaced, or that, how does it work? And then, can you just explain to me a little bit more clarity on exactly how it's going to work from the Oceans Pakisa, section 86 on page 19, the additional proposals from free carry to state carry. Just exactly how, what does it mean? And then I would like to know the part of the proposals is that the department or the minister develop a petroleum charter. Okay, okay. Now, I would like to know, as it is, the mining charter is proposed to be part of this act, and there's a lot of concern around that. And I would like to know, how does it influence, first of all, the fact that there's a court case on the mining charter in court, how does it influence this process of amending this act that the charter is in court with? Because those two things doesn't make sense to me. And then the second one is, if the minister is going to develop a petroleum charter now, it will force, the principle of that will be part of this act. But the charter itself will not be part of this act. Because by the time that this we've done this act, most probably the petroleum charter will not be developed, or if you can give me the time frame. Then my second question is, why was the mining charter fall within the ambit of this act and the petroleum charter fall without it? What influence will that have on the mining industry as it is? And or will we have to amend this bill again? And if we have to amend it then again, why do I have to go through this costly exercise? Is there not a reason why the department can hold this bill back until the petroleum charter is finished and that we go then through the process of amending the bill in its total? I think that at this stage, these are all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Oslobe. Is there any other members who want to pose a question? If there is not, I think I'm going to hand over, Honorable Minister, to you and your department to respond to those questions. My concern, I just want to add, is also the marketing aspect. I don't want to make a big thing of the land and all those. We know that it is difficult. A lot of our people have to sell their land back to the previous owners of the land due to financial difficulties and also the market aspect. We know how the people is doing the things. They will monopoly play will take place. I'm cautious about a lot of things going into my mind. What if we're sitting with all those applications and giving to the people the rights to mine, and that's it. Where are you going to get rid of your mining activities, and are you going to create some markets and means how our people can export their activities? Explain to us. Maybe we don't understand and don't see, but we are just afraid that we are going to sit with the same situation that we are sitting in the land reform process. Thank you very much. Over to you, Minister. Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. Maybe let me say the official should start. I'll end.
Thank you, Minister, Honorable Chair and members.
will be assisted by Ms. Madie with some of the questions that have been raised. Honorable Ngcetha, I'll just seek, I didn't quite get your first question on section 9 of the bill in respect of first come, first served. You were asking how does it relate. I couldn't get that one, if I may ask you, sir.
I'm Honorable Duba. Yeah. Thank you. You've made an example of the workplace. First come, first serve. So I was checking how does it relate.
Yes. Sorry, can I get some discipline here, Honorable Member? Sorry. You must speak through the chair, unfortunately. You cannot have a one-on-one discussion. Then it means we can open this whole room for discussions. We have open discussions. I'm sure there's a lot of people who want to interact with you. So thank you. You will ask for... you can speak, and I will then...
My apologies. I was just asking, because you've made that particular example. So I was just perhaps trying to say if you can come closer in terms of how does it relate to this.
My apologies, Chairperson, as well. Okay, now I understand. It was the only one I didn't get. All that we are saying here is we were using an example of a vacancy at the workplace. That can you imagine if you have a vacancy and you advertise and you say, I have a vacancy of a DDG mineral policy and promotion. And then you apply this notion of first come, first served. Now, the first person who applies, who has the minimum requirement, how it relates to how things currently stand, is that first person must be given the post. And in reality is that you would normally put out an ad for a month, and you would allow people to apply from the day you have put out the date, the vacancy, and you will say this is the closing date, so that you can receive all the applications. And then you can adjudicate the applications, and you can look for the best candidate for the job. Because the best candidate may not necessarily be the first one who applied. It might be the 15th or the 30th. Now, currently, as things stand in the Act, they deny the minister and the government to find the best applicant to be granted the right. Because first come, first served says the first person who applies must be given the right if they meet the minimum requirement. And that's why we are proposing for this shift, so that there can be an application time. And in that, it will allow for the state to adjudicate appropriately and make a determination of the best candidate for development. The one on consultation, my colleague Ms. Madie will deal with it. On section 11 and how we deal with capital investment, and I think that's the question that both Honorable Duba and Honorable Prince have asked. Transformation by its nature, it's a very challenging concept. And one of the things we had identified in the strategy document that I alluded to of 2010 was that before 2010, government looked at pushing transformation and business looked at growing the business. And both of us looked at these two concepts as mutually exclusive. That mine, as a business person, all I want is to grow and maximize my returns. And we as government, we said we want to push transformation at all cost. And I think for the first time, we got into a room as business and government and agreed that both transformation and growth are mutually reinforcing. And that given that mining is a long-term business, in the South African context, you cannot have a growing industry that is not transformed. It is not sustainable. And equally, on our part as government, that you cannot transform an industry that is dying. It is not in our interest. And so the both of us came into a mutual understanding that the symbiotic relation of growth and meaningful transformation go hand in glove. And I cannot emphasize enough the importance thereof. And of course, outside of the players that are being administered by this act, as you correctly say, are the sources of capital. And that requires an approach that will be assisting in taking the nation forward to achieve both the growth and this meaningful transformation that we have alluded to. I think Section 26, if I understand you correctly, Honorable Duba, is that you are saying for beneficiation, if you set up a bill.
Thank you, Honorable Members.
Chair, on Section 11, the Minister's intention is to protect, but there is an unintended consequences that might happen where the Minister might make those who have been given the opportunity to work because they cannot afford the operations. Now, currently, he is just dealing with the other part of saying, I am not going to allow thugs to rob you. I'm going to protect you. But the possibility of making them to work is highly. I'm then asking, what is it that the department has done to ensure that FDIs are coming into the picture? Because unintended consequences would happen in the interest of protecting. So that's where I am. I'm probably, Honorable Chair, you might not have heard me properly.
Okay. Thank you very much. Support fund.
Got it.
Oh, then it's fine. Okay, thanks, Honorable. I think maybe let me repaint the picture. That you can imagine that since the introduction of this act in 2004, that the rights that we have issued on the basis that there is empowerment at the minimum threshold of 26. But we also have rights that are 100% owned by historically disadvantaged, by blacks in particular. Now let's start with the first scenario. So you have BEE empowerment at 26%, and we are excited because on application we can see that empowerment is taking place. In reality, what happens is that within 2 years, black beneficiaries are bought out of the business. And so we completely reverse the gains of de-racializing the ownership of the industry. And if we allow that to happen, in 10 years, we may have gone back to pre-1994 structure of ownership of our industry. That is the importance of including this this clause. So what the clause is then saying is it does not necessarily preclude a situation, for instance, where black partner A in a transaction is replaced wholly or in part with black partner B in the event that there is some sort of dilution that has to take place or an additional capital requirement. In the event that a for instance, a black person owns 100% of the right and they require to raise the capital, which will necessarily introduce a form of dilution, what we don't want to end up with is dilution from 100% to 0% on the back of capital raising. And so it provides this provision enables the minister to make a determination of the extent of dilution from 100% to which acceptable levels of dilution may be allowed, so that we can balance in the interim this notion of transformation and the capital requirements, as it were. Because correctly, the issue of the land restitution, where you find that people that have benefited from being given land ended up selling the land back to their old owners, goes contrary to the efforts of transformation that we are seeking to achieve. And so what this provision is really introducing is that measure of management and control and protection that the government must protect the beneficiaries, so that in the event that one has to walk, they at least have to be replaced with another black beneficiary at the consent of the minister.
So, are you satisfied, honourable members? I don't think so, because you don't understand.
Yeah.
Can someone
let me just say we appreciate the fact that the honourable member understands the spirit. If an investor agrees with the terms and conditions, and thereafter after they've moved away, they change those terms and conditions not to benefit transformation, we're saying all the way, if there's any change, let us know. It means we're trying to encourage genuine investors here in the interest of our own country and its people. Should it happen that a particular investor, maybe before I come to that, let me just hasten to say this bill has been a subject of discussion wherever we have gone, even in the country, in terms of certainty. You can't invest in South Africa because we are not certain about this bill. One issue we're doing here is to be certain, even in this section 11, to say once we have agreed and this portion is for transformation, let us work the path. We have gone to many countries. Investors are ready to come to South Africa and explore and for mining rights. and even for beneficiation. They've raised questions in sessions. We are looking at them. But to be straight and direct to the to your point, we also have DTI that works with companies that may need assistance in terms of financial assistance to close that gap, because that gap will always be there. So I believe that if there's any other shortcoming because of this legislation, we should be able to deal with it if it's not covered. But lastly, Chairperson, the spirit is that, let me make this example, is to ensure that our mineral resources do not benefit other countries rather than us. A living example is that gold was found in Lesotho and it was sold for $12 million. That company went abroad and sold the same gold for $65 million. In terms of minerals, throughout the whole world, South Africa is ranked number one, rich in minerals. But when you look at the turnover, China is number one. Because all our minerals, most of them, gets to those countries. We're saying as the department, let us all come together and resolve whatever problems that might be there, but beneficiation is part of our NDP, which we must all support and see to it how best can we deal with it in terms of creating markets and so forth. The truth is that the department alone cannot be held responsible for that particular issue. I thought I should make those small observations.
Minister, what I think, I don't know whether you will agree with me, put your question in writing so that the department can give you detailed answer on that if you're not satisfied. Do you want to ask a clear question?
No. I think I'm happy with the minister because he is alive to the fact that all that I wanted to highlight is the hostility that will come as a result of Section 11. Are they ready for that? Now, when he mentions DTI, perhaps minister also lift up other financial institutions that can also assist, because in reality, I wanted to check whether are they alive to the reality of hostility, which will ensure that the black fail, you know. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. We are going to give over for the next questions. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Minister and Honourable Chair. I think the proposal on Section 26 in respect of the Minister of Environment, it's not necessarily precluded, because in the proposals it says with a relevant minister, and so I was just making an example with, if there were energy, then Minister of Mineral Resources in consultation with Minister of Energy, but that will not necessarily exclude any other relevant minister, and I think the point of the environment is a valid point, that the streamlining of our processes as government in respect of the effect of environment on development and the balance between Section 24 on environmental protection and development, Minister of Environment is the custodian. So I think it's a it's a comment that we take at heart, but it's provided for. The 10%, what informs 10%? We looked at the costs of both exploration and development of the petroleum industry. They are prohibitively high. For instance, if you take a single offshore well, that's, you know, that if you drill an offshore well on average, of course it's variable whether you are, you know, near shallow terrain or deep terrains and so on. But on average, you are looking at one hole at $100 million. And one hole does not guarantee that you are going to find oil. You might need 5-6 of those in one area. And so, realistically, we then thought that because this is a new industry, the costs are prohibitively high. After consultation, extensive consultations with the various interest groups, the 10% was then seen as a reasonable compromise to enable entry. After all, 10% is not a maximum. It's an absolute minimum. And so in the event that it enables entry of historically disadvantaged people, in the event that they could come in as partners at a higher threshold, sure they can. And I think Honorable Labuskagni, on the consultation, my colleague will deal with that one. Section 23 on SLP. I think here, Honorable, there might have been a small misunderstanding that we are saying that there is currently fear of the suspension of the right on the basis of non-compliance. In our view, it is not a question of fear currently. It is that both SLP and mining charter are the requirements in terms of the law. And non-compliance to the law would be dealt with in terms of relevant sections, provisions that relate to non-compliance. However, we are proposing an explicit stating in this bill that non-compliance will, with particularly these two aspects of transformation, because social and labor plan is about transformation, mining charter is about transformation, and to the effect that they are explicitly stated in the bill, assists with a common understanding of the intent. That is the proposal that is before you. The influence of Section 26 on GATT. Honorable Member, I will get you a specific provision in the GATT that allows for countries to take extraordinary measures, including restrictions, on the basis that such restrictions are timed. They have particular time frames. And so it is therefore clear and naturally follows that
on the basis of this provision contained in the GATT that enable member countries to take those extraordinary measures, and the provision that is currently, and I will read it to you, just a moment. So, but in essence, Section 26 is saying that, remember we said designation is after minister consults with the relevant minister, and under 2B we're saying every producer of designated mineral must offer to local beneficiation a prescribed percentage of its production of mineral or mineral products in prescribed quantities, qualities, and time frames. And the inclusion of the prescription of quantities, qualities, and time frames is therefore not inconsistent with the GATT provision, as it were. I commit to extract that relevant provision and submit it to the House.
Section 26.
Yes. GATT being a general agreement on trade and tariffs. So, what is the percentage of local minerals? And I think the issue of time frames we have outlined. Again, Honourable, in terms of Section 26, 2. So, Section 26, 2, it says that the minister must, in consultation with the minister of a relevant department, firstly designate a mineral, B, after taking into consideration the national development imperatives, and then it explains those imperatives, and C, after considering the advice of the council as contemplated in Section 56B, publish such conditions required to ensure security of supply. So every mineral, you know, is treated differently. Coal, for instance, would be very different from platinum group metals, would be very different from phosphate and any other mineral. And so the consultation of ministers would be an issue of where are we taking industrialization, for instance, in terms of steel production. And for argument's sake, if we as a country are saying we want to quadruple steel production by 2030, we will then look at the input minerals into steel production. And then the consultation will take place and the determination of... That is just an anecdote. I'm not saying we are planning to quadruple steel production. I want to emphasize that. So that is the conceptualization around Section 26, and the issue of the market is a very important issue. You know, Minister was in one of the very big countries economically last month, and his message is very clear. In engaging with these countries, he says to them, you have what we need and we have what you need. And so we are looking at partnerships between ourselves and these countries that require the input minerals, and many of them have understand that security of mineral supply is very important, and equally they have the markets, and we have the minerals. So you can imagine that marriage between South Africa and those countries, and you can figure out quite a number of countries that our minister is leading the engagements with to establish these partnerships, because we are not saying that we want to insulate South Africa and we want to beneficiate exclusively by South Africans and nobody else. No. We are saying that come and beneficiate some stages in the country, and the partnership is what we call value chain integration, effectively. And in our view, that value chain integration will then provide necessarily for the security of the market for those who are participating in the beneficiation space. So the agreement on PAKISA, honorable member, we went into quite a protracted process of engagement with our petroleum stakeholders as a directive, as a resolution of PAKISA, because they raised quite a number of critical hindrances for them to make investment in terms of the bill as it went to the president at that time. And so over this period, we have unpacked every single one of those areas and negotiated at length with our stakeholders, you know, so that we can achieve our developmental objectives, but balance that with the interest of business. You may recall we had said one of our objects of this bill is to balance national development imperatives with the interest of business. And we believe that in unpacking each and every one of these areas of concern, we have found what is, and in fact it was termed by our petroleum industry, they call it a uniquely South African win-win solution. They have written to our minister to express that view, both OPASA and ONPASA, OPASA being offshore and ONPASA being the onshore representative, jointly written to the minister, not once, the former minister and the current minister here present, expressing that view that this process of comprehensive engagement with themselves has indeed delivered that, and they have expressed their readiness to roll out these massive investments as soon as you have processed the bill. I think you also asked somewhere on the petroleum charter and the mining charter and the issue of the courts and so on. And let me say that there is a specific matter in court which deals with the interpretation of the empowerment element in the mining charter. Because the elements of the mining charter, the mining charter is provided for in the bill, and not necessarily the modalities thereof. Those modalities are contained in the mining charter itself. That's the first thing. And so you wouldn't necessarily have to come back and amend subject to the outcomes of that process. But secondly, currently the there had not been an explicit provision of the petroleum, the upstream petroleum charter. And so that's why we are proposing that we provide for the development of that charter, you know, within 12 months of the bill being assented to. I think I have covered those. So it is indeed, Honorable Labuskagne, important that we have engaged as part of the PAKISA outcomes as well on some aspect of what the upstream petroleum charter would look like, including the 10% that was earlier referenced in the presentation. I think the concern on the markets I have dealt with. I will hand over to Mrs. Madie to deal with the other.
Thank you, Chair, Honorable Chairperson, thank you, Minister, and Honorable Members. Honorable Duba, I think we also accept that the issues of consultation are crucial. And what we have undertaken to do is that we will prescribe in the regulation the process of consultation, what we refer to it as meaningful consultation. So like Mr. Mabuza had already highlighted, that the consultation will be facilitated by DMR. So DMR will always be there on the consultation to ensure that the people who are consulted are the relevant people who are supposed to be consulted, because we've had concerns that sometimes mining companies go and bring a report where they've consulted people who are not relevant to the operation. What we've also, with the regulations, will highlight is that we need to know the report. After the applicant consults, there's a report that must be submitted to the DMR. The report must highlight who was consulted, what were the issues that were raised, how were those issues addressed. So in that way, we'll then be able to see if there were issues that were raised and how were they addressed by the holder. And the Act further provides for a provision where the regional manager will refer back the issues that have been raised if the regional manager believes that they have not been addressed in a correct manner back to the applicant, and where an agreement is then reached by the applicant and the lawful occupier or the landowner, that agreement will be forwarded to the regional manager for noting and a referral to the REMDEC committee for minister's consideration. And on the issues of environment, Honorable Labuskagne, what we were highlighting there is that in terms of the 2010 agreement and the 2008 agreement, both the ministers of mineral resources and environmental affairs agreed that we need to have one environmental management system. So in terms of the agreement, the Minister of Mineral Resources is the competent authority and to implement the environmental provisions, and the Minister DEA remains the competent authority for legislation. So the sections that are highlighted here are the sections that have since moved from the MPRDA. These are sections that relate to environmental issues. They've been omitted in the MPRDA, and they've been moved to the NEMA Act. So that was the clarity that we were providing. And the issue of stockpiles, in the MPRDA, we are providing for a system on how the historical residue stockpiles are being addressed. We are providing for the holders with an opportunity to come and amend their rights to incorporate the stockpiles within an area where they operate. And if there's no holder who claims, then the DMR, the minister, will stockpiles will be available for application by third parties. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Smith, you want to pose a question? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My apology for my voice.
I've got four questions. The first question I would like to state is with regards to the issuing of licenses, you know, and basically the minister having the powers to determine who's going to get the license. In the perfect world, you know, we can say you are the best person for the job. But the reality is we sit with quite a few scenarios that we can show within the country that it can be used as a form or a process of patronage. And how can we be ensured that this will not be used to favor individuals or being used to get some form of trade-off or whatever, you know, under the table to make sure that certain people get these licenses. What scenario will be used to determine who is the best person or which is the best company to actually get these licenses? The second question is in terms of change of ownership. It blows my mind that if there's a certain percentage owned by black individuals or owners and it's sold to another black owner, why do the minister need to give his nod of the head for that? It's not going to change the status quo of transformation. Why isn't it limited to saying that it only needs consideration by the minister if there's a change in the equilibrium or what equity or the status quo within the diversity of ownership within these companies. The third thing is in terms of previously disadvantaged, because you know we are moving away from making sure that all previously disadvantaged individuals are actually benefiting, and it is narrowed down to black ownership. Yes, we know it needs to be addressed, but it seems like it's totally excluding all other previously disadvantaged individuals. How are we going to make sure that gender is balanced within it, disability, and so we can go on? I feel that's very narrow-minded, and it is not addressing the whole scenario of disadvantaged individuals previously. The fourth item is with regards to public or communities having a problem with rights being issued in a certain area, either environmental or whatever the case may be. And this is something that we discussed before within the committee, that ordinary South Africans don't always have the resources to oppose very powerful industries, you know, to say that this is going to influence us either through health or other livelihoods negatively. And it comes down to, you know, individuals running or battling a license to an extent where they run out of resources. And one of the proposals before was that we look at the American model where the state makes sure that there's a fund available for ordinary South Africans to be able to compete fairly in saying, you know, there is problems with issuing of licenses. And we had quite a few of these things happening in Mogalakwena with the Volspruit mine, you know, where the community battled and they had to run around for resources to say, but, you know, this is not on. And they almost ran out of resources, but they kept on fighting, and it keeps on coming back and being sidelined. So within this act, I can't really see that we're attending to that specific problem of making sure that ordinary South Africans can oppose, you know, the issuing of licenses. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Smith, I'm going to give over to the department, Minister, to the department for response, please, to those four questions.
Well, Chairperson, thank you. And maybe let me appreciate the questions from Honourable Smith. Ministers do take an oath when they get into an office. And I imagine a situation where we can begin to have trust on each other, on positions that we occupy. And I believe the question does not suggest that as ministers we can't be capable of fairly, without any favor, give rights to those who deserve it within the parameters of the law. Because we have demonstrated that we have examples. But the department will then give, there are mechanisms that even the minister cannot wake up. In fact, the minister is the last person. Issue of rights starts from the regions. And those people are the ones that check whether the applicant qualifies and meet the requirements. By the time it arrives in the office of the minister, is to really check whether all the requirements have been complied with. And I believe the department has capable officials to do that. There might be issues there and there, but we are addressing them in the department. And once issues have been raised with us, we do stand up and take actions in addressing those issues. They'll also deal with the ownership. But the simple understanding is that we didn't want to, really want to segregate between people. I was reading an article written by Amapungane on the same face value as a Zulu. If you say Amapungane, I just think these are black people. Only to find Amapungane is the name, but the company is white. Now, those issues, before we come to a point of saying this transfers from black to black, it must land on the table. And we must satisfy ourselves that it meets the requirement as any other transfer. That was the spirit. Let me allow the officials to deal with the rest of the questions and fill in where they think I've left.
Thank you, Chairperson. You make me think about the surnames also. That you have to change your surnames to whatever to fit in with the environment. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, Minister, and Honorable Schmidt. I think as Minister says with Amapungane example, Honorable Schmidt, the experience we have had is that things are not always what they seem. And that's why you would know that the amended Companies Act criminalizes fronting. And the reason it criminalizes fronting is because it is a reality of our economic activity in the context of transformation. And therefore, what is being suggested here supports this notion of dealing a blow to this notion of fronting. And I think on that basis, you would appreciate, Honorable Smith, that it's important to validate, and for the government and the minister in particular, that the undermining of transformation does not happen under his guard when he assumes that black is replaced with black in ownership. And on this issue of previously disadvantaged Africans or South Africans to black, in the Constitution, black persons are defined as Africans, coloreds, and Indians. And so black in this context does not necessarily refer to black African exclusively. It includes those categories of previously disadvantaged South Africans. And again, I want to emphasize what our experience has been in the pursuit to circumvent our intentions to transform. We included historically disadvantaged South Africans, which part of it included the benefit of white women. And our experience has been that there had been an exclusive employment of white women, an empowerment of white women, because they are part of the HDSA, to the detriment of the true and real beneficiaries of transformation. Because as much as white women were partly disadvantaged, but they were also partly advantaged by association. And so the level of the need for transformation there is miles apart. And so some of these requirements to strengthen, you'd recall as well, one of our objectives to strengthen the architecture are based on the behavior of the industry we regulate, because we start by giving it the benefit of the doubt that it is part of transformation agenda, and the response that we get goes completely contrary to our intentions. And that leaves us with no option but to strengthen. Because if we don't strengthen, that will continue to have some of these problems that we see visibly in the areas where mining is taking place. I think currently, in terms of the inlet for communities to raise their concerns, we have created this the RAMDEX. I have to be reminded. The full name of RAMDEC is...
It's the Regional Mining Development Environmental Committee.
Right. So the purpose of a RAMDEC is so that if a community seeks to raise an objection on the issuing of the right, they can do that through this structure. You can argue about the efficacy of the structure. And so I think Minister did say that there are areas that we still need to strengthen as we move forward. And I think in support of your argument, this is an area that can also be strengthened so that, the communities do not necessarily have to take on the industry through other channels that require excessive amounts of resources for them to do so. They should be able to do so within the structures that are created by the law. And so clearly the strengthening of these structures becomes absolutely key.
Thank you, DG. Honorable Minister.
We should also say there are challenges, Chair, with regard to communities being also used by these big companies. The same province in Limpopo, a community writes to the minister and say, "Minister, we are not happy, we have not been consulted on this right. I take action, I stop, I say, no, go consult the community." 2 weeks down the line, the same community goes to our offices, marching, saying, "When are you issuing the right?" 400 people with passes, with T-shirts, now demanding the right. Now we say, no, but the right was stopped by you because you are not consulted. What is now happening? I think we also will engage with stakeholders and strengthen our own mechanisms of engaging with the communities. So that when we talk about a community, it should be a genuine concern from the community, not a genuine concern from somebody who's behind the community. The same story is taking place in Ekolobeni. Black people are there wearing T-shirts saying, "We are environmentalists. We do not want development here." If you engage them individually, you find that there are more problems behind these people. I think we need to engage in that problem. I'm just sharing that problem with the honorable members to also understand as we move together that sometimes you see communities, but behind the communities are companies.
Thank you very much, Minister. Before I'm going to... Honourable Member, yeah, we know that the people out there is very creative. Every time when government put a policy, you can go and you can do research, BEE, whatever. They are creative on doing other things, bringing in how to hijack those policies for the benefit of them. But that is why we as members of parliament have to be the watchdog also, to monitor and to do our oversight, to look at the implementation and what is going on there. Because if we really want to do justice, we must go out there and ask all the companies, the frontiers, to come here and appear in front of us. Because they really need to pay for what they did the past few years to this, to our government, by frontiers, what they're using our people for. And we can go on and on and on. I'm going to give over to the honorable member to pose a question. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. That was a question that I was asking. Honorable Minister, on section 10 to 16 consultation, because now they have extended the scope even to be emphatic on traditional leaders. It's exactly what I was asking. What mechanism have you put in place to ensure that that problem of a Colombian in Ekolobeni, you are able to deal with it? It's a bad course in Afrikaans. I think go back and check when would consultation be sufficient as consultation. so that it is not somebody's wisdom. On the issue of Honorable Smith, perhaps Honorable Minister, I think it should not be about the trust, you know. Perhaps we should be, because one is afraid lately, and even in the transformation, it can be delayed through courts. There is a issue of going to court. If that kind of question is being asked, we should be able to say these are the mechanisms to ensure that the process is transparent, finished, and clear. So that you limit this temptation of trying to run departments through court. I think, Mnache, on this issue of Honorable Smith, I just wanted to transparency and everything, this is how the process is going to work, and this is I, as a minister, going to do the determination, finish and clear. I think, thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Member. The committee can also ask the list of applications and how, in the names of the companies that you issued license. I mean, it's our role to ask it, to make sure that we, you are transparent in fair in the process. If there is no other questions, is there any other questions? If not, I'm going to give over to you, Minister, to say a few words in closure. Thank you.
Well, no, thanks. Let me appreciate the time you have given us and the engagement we had. We look forward to work together in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I must really say thank you for very, very, very informative presentation. We must now do our work together with the provinces to make sure that we do proper consultation with the affected people, the role players out there. From my side, I think although there is not minerals in the Western Cape, there is like other minerals, like the sand and the stones and that kind of thing that we are not into. I hope that is part of this bill, the attention to give us also a way to come into those areas. I keep on raising it. It is serious. People think that we cannot play roles. And I'm also serious about calling those companies. People must come forward. If we are talking about the truth, the waarheid and versoening commissie, then we must call those people. I you know, people is not taking our ex and what you call it seriously, really. They do as they please, because they know that we don't have proper oversight of doing, and they're using our people. And I'm always saying, when a person complains about a person who uses their names and they never get anything, you know, out of these things, you allowed it. Because you, in the first place, gave the person your names and all the details to use you. And you know it's not supposed, was not supposed to be like that. But nevertheless, sometimes it's also, that's why we're raising the funding problem. We don't have the resources. Our people don't have the money to go into those kinds of businesses. Therefore, I'm glad that you are going to look into the matter of assisting our people to get into those. With that words, I want to thank you for coming, and everyone within the room who attending the meeting, thank you very much for sitting throughout, and have a nice day. Safe journey. Thank you, Minister. Can the members stay behind that we can close?
for you. Why? Yeah. Come on, come on.
Oh.
That's public. No,
I'm
not going to. Come on.
Why?
Oh.
Thank you very much. We still have business to do, but we don't have a quorum. Therefore, we cannot proceed with the other items in the agenda. And we have to carry it over. The best way is to
Please, Sabuna. So far.